David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks, and welcome to Marvel Noise episode 324. I'm your still a little stuffy host, Steve Raker, asking for your forgiveness as I recover from a mutant strain sinus infection here in the world famous comic book bunker. You can find Marvel Noise on both Facebook and Twitter, of course, if you really try. This episode, WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit, my usual partners in crime, will be on to tolerate hearing my airing of grievances and awarding of accolades as I fire off some thoughts about the Marvel Universe of titles over this last year and where most of them stand with me as I clean the slate for 2019. But first, in the spirit of the holiday season, let me take you back to the Christmas season of 1982. I was 12 years old in those days, the days well after the Marvel Treasury editions of years past, and years before the square-bound Marvel holiday specials of the 90s. In those days, true believers, Marvel's creative teams celebrated the season in the pages of the regular monthlies, with special Christmas issues just like Marvel Team Up 127, which was adorned with a snowy cover rendered by cover specialist Ed Hannigan and inker Al Milgram, whose pencils and inks were, at this time, at their most stylized and best, in my opinion. The team-up for this issue? Spider-Man and the Watcher. But how can that be, right? Those characters' dynamics hardly match each other. Spidey's a street-level, wisecracking crime fighter, while the Watcher is part of a cosmic race of silent observation data collectors, sworn to watch but never to interfere. This issue is written by J.M. DeMatteis, with pencils by Kerry Gamille, inks by Mike Esposito, letters by Rick Parker, colors by Glynis Wynn. It's like a This Is Your Life going on here, and edited by Tom DeFalco under the watchful eye created as Santa's helper, Jim Shooter. Mark DeMatteis' Watcher's dialogue explains that to stand aeon after aeon, bearing mute witness to the flow of life, shrivels the heart, desiccates the soul. So enwrapped are we Watchers in matters of cosmic import that we've lost touch with the ordinary, the mundane, the day-to-day trials of the beings we so dispassionately observe. But on this night, Christmas Eve, the Watcher feels a kinship to these strange and magnificent beings called man, and he reaches out indirectly as he attempts to observe infinity inside a single human heart. The story opens with the web-slinger arriving to visit his Aunt May on Christmas Eve. Now, this is during the time period that she boarded with a half dozen or so other senior citizens, including her wheelchair-bound fiancé, Nathan Lebunski. And there's much merriment, and Peter, Spidey's alter ego, is pleased that his beloved aunt is able to spend holidays now with a group of people she cares so deeply about, and they about her. But Peter notices that one resident, Mr. Chekhov, is moping a bit, and he decides to call him on it. Chekhov is indeed in the dumps, as his only surviving family member, his granddaughter Bette, never visits, and although he's begged her to come for Christmas this year, he realizes that she likely won't. Soon after, Peter's spider sense starts tingling, leading him outside, after a big bold lie to Aunt May, of course, and he forages through a brief snow squall until he's standing in the presence of the Silent Watcher himself, who at this time Spidey had not yet met or even heard of. Watcher, that's Fantastic Four territory right there. The Watcher gives Spider-Man a stone with the visage of Chekhov's granddaughter, Bette, like, within it. Then the Watcher silently teleports back up to his citadel on the blue area of the dark side of the moon and basically grabs some popcorn and does his thing. He watches. Spidey then goes on a wild goose chase to find this girl. Using the latest technology of the day, a payphone, and directory assistance, he's dealing with an operator that's like the Lily Tomlin Saturday Night Live, you know, operator. We just lost Peoria, and the operator, as Spider-Man is swinging away and the phone is still hanging off the hook, comments that he must have cursed her on his way from the payphone. So he gets her address in Brooklyn Heights, and arriving there, police are already on the scene. And much to Spidey's horror, they're loading a corpse into an ambulance. Fortunately, though, it's not Bette, but it's her roommate, who's been shot dead in their apartment amongst a few $1,000s worth of cocaine. Now, Spidey, he gets frustrated in his search. He just doesn't know where to go. He's running out of options and running out of time. But just as he's sitting on the, he's like moping on the edge of a building, as he is known to do, and he gets a serendipitous rooftop pep talk from none other than Captain America. And it's just what he needed to keep going. The Watcher rewards Spider-Man's renewed vim and vigor by delivering a clue via this image stone. It's an image of Jimmy's Corner Bar. So Spidey makes his way there in haste, and then lays waste to the tough guys who are inside. But no one there has even heard of or seen Bette. Outside the bar, Spidey is again questioning the Watcher's guidance when he hears shouting in the apartment above the bar that he just totally trashed. It's Bette, and she's in trouble. You see, Bette and her now-deceased roommate, they were storing the cocaine for Buck Todd, the guy who lives above the bar. But he didn't tell the girls the coke was stolen from the mob. And the mob came looking for it and killed Bette's roommate. Bette heard the whole altercation. She was up on the rooftop because it had started snowing on Christmas Eve, and she thought that was so sweet that she went up there to see the snow falling and then heard the gunshots below. Now, I'm thinking, didn't the cops find, like, thousands worth of coke still at the scene of the murder? Wouldn't the mob have taken it back? I mean, that took me out of the story for a second, but I pushed on. Now, Buck Todd, he's slapping Bette around and decides to kill her so that she can't rat him out if the mob finds her. And that's when Spidey bursts in, making short order of Buck Todd while he talks about how great he is in third person. Nobody takes out Buck Todd, you hear? Nobody! And Bette rabbits while Spidey's attention is on Buck. Buck Todd. She gets seen by mobsters who have been trailing her the whole time. In a car whose license plate reads R2-D2. Now, the mobsters were trying to trail her back to her supplier, good old Buck Todd, to get their coke back. Wait, what? I thought they left the thousands worth back at her place at the scene of the murder. Whatever. Forging on, folks. They corner Bette in an alley. But in comes Spidey to save the day, using his spider signal to strike fear into them as he approaches from the air. I miss the old Spidey signal. While Spidey is tangling with them, Bette flees again, but right into the path of one more mob goon who is waiting by the car outside the alley. And he just points and shoots her. Spidey's all, "No! I'm too late!" And he's shaking his fist at the sky, kind of aiming for the Watcher, who then appears in front of Spidey as the girl lay there dying. And Spidey starts raging at this silent monolith of a cosmic being and throws the image stone right back at him. But it explodes on its way to the Watcher, and it sends Captain Marvel-like twinkly little eminences of light that float into the girl, who afterwards breathes steadily. She's recovering. Spidey describes all this to the Watcher and us, the reader, but the Watcher already knows, just like the reader already knows. We just saw it happen. He points towards the hospital, and Spidey realizes, oh yeah, I should take her there, and he does. We next see Peter getting good news from the hospital doctors that Bette is going to make it, and she's in recovery, just as May and Nathan arrive with Chekhov, who is welcomed by his near-unconscious but recovering granddaughter. They're going to need each other after this, and Peter looks appropriately towards the moon, and instead of shaking his fist, this time he thanks the Watcher. and the Watcher admits to us, the readers, that he was humbled to tune into and experience eternity in the life of one ant-like little dweeb of a human. End scene. And that's how we did our Christmas comics back in the 80s, kids. Now, without haste, let me get the guys on as we go around the Marvel Universe. All right, I got the guys on the line, as promised, as hoped. What's going on, guys?
I'm on the rotary phone.
Hey, Super Steve. Happy holidays.
Yay! When on last episode we talked about the Immortal Hulk title and sort of billed it as the possible book of the year in my mind, I got a lot of feedback regarding that, and people saying, "Well, what about this book or that book for the other books of the year?" And it was somewhat of a catalyst for me to catch up on some of the titles that I have let pile up, because even though I'm a monthly buyer, I kind of read almost like in trade form. You know, I kind of wait for a storyline to get its legs under it before I start diving in, so that I don't forget what's going on by the time the third act comes around, you know? But I fell short of a couple of titles that I didn't catch up on. We'll have to talk about those next episode. But I danced around the Marvel Universe and was trying to think about, publishing-wise, really what my favorite books of the year were and what books really didn't tickle my fancy. And I'm curious as to your opinions on how I'm feeling about some of the Marvel books these days.
I think if I was going to compare it against last year, I think better than last year. But then, like, I know some books aren't for me, so I don't know if it's sometimes fair for me to put those books into an equation if I was going to design some kind of algorithm.
No, I mean, again, you might ask me in 2 days and I would have somewhat of a slightly different opinion, but for now, I gave it a little bit of thought and just sort of tasted what taste formed in the back of my mouth as I was checking in on some of these titles.
And well, the thing is, too, Steve, like, I'm not into Star Wars, but I keep on hearing people say they like Star Wars, so I go, I guess Marvel's doing all right in that corner, and I guess I should, like raise the status of books I don't read, going, people seem to be enjoying that. Like, that's why it's sometimes weird.
Well, it should be your ranking, not, like, right. If you're not reading the books or you're not into it, it doesn't mean it's bad or good. It just means incomplete grade or not for you, which I think is a fine recognition. I don't think we should be grading books we're not reading.
And well, Conan is coming, yeah, Kevin. Conan is coming.
Sometimes it's a feeling like, how are you supposed to say how a publisher is doing, or what a feeling of a, or if you're going to make some broad statement of something, like how a year was, if
you're acting far too grown up, Kevin. You're talking about having some piles of comics on the floor of your bedroom where you're lying prone in a little square of sunlight where the sun shines through your window and makes the rug warm. And you're sitting there reading some comics, and these were the ones I really liked, and these were the ones, the titles that, and more in the superhero universe, too. We don't have to get into Star Wars, but I am curious, what's your thoughts in general on the Conan character? I don't know if I've ever talked about that with you. Are you excited that Conan is coming, or that's going to be a hard pass, just like Star Wars? Oh, boy.
I think I was... I think I was excited and was going to buy it, like, on a monthly basis, and I still might try out, like, the first issue, but I have, like, all the Dark Horse stuff in hardcovers, and that's how I read it for a long time, so then I was like, maybe I should just wait. Like, I don't know. There are some other miniseries coming up, though, that I might just buy the miniseries and singles, but I don't know if I'll buy the ongoing series, because there's a lot of stuff, And I don't feel like the urgency, like, you better get in on this Conan or you're gonna, like, I suppose everyone could be reading it, but I've always waited.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I'm going to be picking up the issues, but not reading them until the story's done.
Yeah.
So, or the chapter.
I'm really hoping that they take advantage of the Marvel Universe and fold him into Star Wars, the 616, like, all kinds of great crossovers and fun stuff like that. Like
Conan, hey man, versus Marvel Darth Vader.
I don't know if you've seen solicitations, Andrew. Actually, you haven't, because you don't look at that, but I won't say anything else.
Oh, so I should get excited. I am very excited for Conan versus Darth Vader. Like, he's going to think Darth is some dark wizard.
Well, this is, if we're going to do,
and then at the end, he'll get, you know, like, he'll fall into the portal and end up back in, you know, they'll end it like they always do those ones, but that's always fun.
With new insights. You know
what I say, what ifs they could do? Like, they could totally do, like, some Star Wars or Conan what ifs. I'm like, that would be crazy. Like, who's, like, why not?
They did Conan what ifs. They brought Conan into the regular, they brought him into the trial of Jean Grey, for crying out loud, and he had to fight Wolverine.
But, so, I just feel like he's a character that travels well and can be dropped in anywhere in the Marvel Universe and have fun with it. And it doesn't really, like, he's timeless in a way.
Yep.
And so, therefore, and the continuity sort of exists and doesn't exist at the same time. That makes him an interesting character. And I really hope they're not just like, hey, let's redo Belit again. Like, an old mother.
The elephant.
Great story. Yeah. Stories that are all great, but I don't know that I need to see the 40th adaptation of that stuff, as opposed to, like, yeah, we're Marvel. We got the license, man. And or I'd cross-license them, have them show up in ROM and G.I. Joe with IDW, and then cross-license them across the street and have Batman versus Conan.
Thank gosh he's back at Marvel where they can protect him from that, because that's kind of what we're getting with Red Sonja, right? With those Dynamite things. She's meeting up with Deja Thoris and stuff, and it's like, how many decades has it been since there's been a good Red Sonja story? Good Lord.
No, I feel that Conan, it's a stronger stable. No offense to Deja Thoris, but come on, Steve. You're comparing Batman and Darth Vader to Deja Thoris?
I want to see Conan encounter Access, and then he's like, this is the way to the DC universe.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, wait. And all of a sudden, like, this blue hand comes out, and you can't really tell the story, and that's as close as you get to the crossover.
A pale blue hand pushes him back.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. I mean, I would like to see, there's just lots of, another great one, I would totally read Conan versus the Taskmaster, because he could learn all his sword moves, but he wouldn't have Conan's sheer power.
He wouldn't know the riddle of the steel.
So how, you know, does the power overwhelm his superior technique?
Yikes.
I want to see, now, what if Conan was Darth Vader?
Oh, dear.
Or what if Conan had the Infinity Gauntlet?
There you go. What kind of world would he project?
Off the rails, my friends.
What if Gamora, could she defeat Conan?
Oh.
Like in sword battle?
What happened to that? What happened to that event, the Infinity Wars? Dugan's Guardians.
What happened, Steve? Exactly. What happened?
Dugan's Guardians of the Galaxy had its good moments. That had some good characterization. I'm like, this is going somewhere. It had the, I thought, decent resolution of the where Abnett and Lanning had took the Darkhawk character and made some sense of all that and actually made it be interesting. And then we get into this whole Infinity Wars thing, and I guess it started out a little intriguing that one stone helped empower the next in a connection kind of a way. But what a hot mess. I mean, from just dropping the stones into people's hands, seemingly at a whim without any explanation, and now I think I saw some solicit for an upcoming limited series that we're going to find out how Wolverine got one of the stones. Wasn't Wolverine dead? Isn't he only returning now? It got to be far too much with the crossover titles, too. Or not necessarily crossover, but the tie-ins, I should say. It was... I don't know if it was because we just recently read those DC Marvel amalgam books, but it seems so derivative of that, having these mashup characters, right down to the Doctor Strange, Strange Fate type character being the one who's like fighting to save the status quo, his universe that really shouldn't exist, you know? I tell you though, the gem of this whole series, both the main Infinity Wars
say, Steve,
and the tie-ins, was the Sleepwalker limited series. It was really nostalgic, and it was really good, written by Chad Bowers and Chris Sims with art by Todd Knock. If you read that silly Sleepwalker series, the Brett Blevins drawn stuff from back in the 90s during that Dark Hawk, Sleepwalker time, this was a really good four issues.
I had a different selection. I was going to select Cosmic Ghost Rider. As the out of all the breakouts of that, that's the one I've been enjoying the most.
But it is directly tied.
That doesn't come out of all that?
That comes out of Thanos.
Yeah, isn't that part of the Infinity Stones and all that stuff?
I mean, not directly.
I thought Donny Cates' Thanos book was all right. It did seem more about setting up that world, though, you know, and introducing that Cosmic Ghost Rider. That Cosmic Ghost Rider series ended up being really entertaining, much to my surprise. I think the concept is kind of silly, and I usually don't like to go do the alternate universe kind of a thing, unless it's really referencing our universe and sort of quote-unquote matters to the regular Marvel U continuity, but that ended up just being a fun romp. It had some fun one-liners, and it was just a big, dumb fun.
I don't know. I guess I put all the Cosmic in the same bucket, like the Black Order series and all that stuff. Even if it doesn't come out of the thing, I just figure that's Marvel Cosmic.
Yep.
As Guardians of the Galaxy?
I'm still waiting for that book to get good. It seems like it should. I like the idea of it, but it needs a little bit more of its legs under it, I think, to get a sense of what it's going to be. I liked Loki's portrayal in the Infinity Wars thing. I just read the conclusion of it, and fair enough, but it just seems to have, again, sort of... It seems like every writer can't tell stories with the Guardians of the Galaxy as the Guardians of the Galaxy, the movie cast thing. They have to break them up, separate them, disassemble them, not have them be them. I don't know why they can't function as a group in comic book form. Not since Abnett and Lanning have they been able to.
Yeah, I don't know.
I also think it's a little bit tougher on some of these event sort of things to get it all right, because I didn't do as deep a dive, but as you know, Steve, I did a big deep dive on the Spider-Geddon thing,
right?
And while overall it was enjoyable, just you, that was a smaller than the Infinity, all those crossovers, but even they couldn't get the timing, and the books came out in weird order and everything. So again, it's not fatal to it, but it removes the urgency to have to sit and buy these weekly, like, why wouldn't I just wait and read it all when it's all out type of thing, which I think defeats the purpose of having these kind of little mini events, right? Don't they want people to kind of drive the excitement? But when everything comes out all higgledy-piggledy, like I said, you still enjoy it, and years from now I'm not going to remember that it was all out of order, but it means that I'm not telling people, oh, you got to go every week and get all the issues now.
And in hindsight, you hear time and time again, too, how a creator had a story for the title they were writing, and marketing and editorial blew it up into a big multi-title event, right? So there's some of that that you don't know if that sort of happened to things, too. But, I mean, it's not just this Infinity Wars thing. Even Dugan was breaking them apart and separating them soon after he got on the title. And Bendis did the same thing when he was on the book.
Yeah. And Angela came in.
And I think the common factor is, and I think it is an effect of the movie popularity, is the movie Star-Lord doesn't work as our Star-Lord in the comic books. The Guardians of the Galaxy haven't been a good comic since Peter Quill was Peter Quill with brown hair.
That's why I think we have an interesting test coming up.
Well, also, not to be overly cynical, but the split up allows a whole bunch of nice number ones, too. You know, you get Rocket number one and all that. Every time they split them up, they're like, yep, now it's time for another number, even if it just lasts, you know, that issue or two issues.
Right, there was a Drax series, there was a Gamora series.
That was good.
They were.
I never read the Drax, but the Gamora was good.
Ooh, the Drax one was really fun. Him and Terax, that having a buddy adventure was quite entertaining. That was the one that was like written by someone who's in other entertainment, I think, like a musician.
Yeah, wrestler. I think it was a wrestler.
That's it. Yep. Yeah. That was good. You're talking about the Thanos Cosmic Ghost Rider stuff. I think where Donny Cates, the writer of that material, where his work really shined was on that Venom title.
Oh, yeah. And the one-shots.
The concepts to me of making Venom have the... Going back to the planet of the symbiotes and the god of the symbiotes and all that stuff, it seems ludicrous, but the execution is so entertaining that it's hard not to give this book its place amongst the best of the year. I didn't like the whole idea of the Vietnam vets and the government had already encountered the symbiotes and now they're all that stuff, but it was told very well if you just suspended disbelief of the whole how Spider-Man seemingly so randomly connected with the symbiote in the first place on the Secret Wars planet way back when, and know that before then the government was already on top of all that. I mean, you know, give me a break. But the story was very well told. It was very enjoyable, and I continue to see where it's going to go.
What's fun about Venom is he's so malleable. Because you think about that Space Knight title.
I like
with
that.
Olivetti. I liked it, too. But this is, I mean, how different is this from that? Like, what a it's a character that I feel can be whatever, almost whatever you need it to be. You're not really burdened by too much. Because in that one, you know, he's the hero out, you know, collecting a ragtag bunch of misfits that he protects and everything. And now he's back to being more violent and our regular old Venom.
And he had a mega hit movie, too.
I didn't see it, but I will. It'll make it to some sort of platform that I subscribe to at some point.
It's under my tree right now, waiting to be discovered.
You're not supposed to spoil Santa's surprises.
I was very good this year, so I made sure I got some good stuff.
But yeah, I'm, as I mentioned before, the Cosmic Ghost Rider was I thought was fun, big, dumb, fun comics, which I feel sometimes they can get away from, only because it doesn't lend itself to movie like, no one's ever going to make a movie of that. Or if they are, they're going to clean it up quite a bit.
I don't know.
I don't think any of the Marvel movies have that level of craziness going on. They're pretty
maybe a
solidly
cartoon.
Straight.
More cartoon.
I mean, they also have... Because normally the fun stuff is less a million things, a million absurd propositions. It's more stuff like a title Kevin and I like, Unstoppable Wasp. At least I assume. I don't know if Kevin's read the new relaunch. Maybe he doesn't like it.
Yeah, I read the first issue. It was good.
I like it. Like I said, I feel the art is a bit not as good as it was before, but I still like it.
Yeah, I think I like the stylization of the original artist more, but it's still good, so...
Yeah, yeah, it's still good.
I can't really complain. Like, it's not like you're really taking a step down. Like, they put some, I don't know, some random artist that you don't like on the book, right? The anatomy is, like, totally off or something. Like, it's nothing like that. Like, I can recognize it's just a stylish thing.
I usually like Giri Huru's art. I liked it very much on the Gwenpool title just before this. But I don't know, does he do his own coloring, or is there another colorist? Because it seems like I'm not digging the blends on the flesh tones and stuff. I would prefer flat colors on Guri Hiru's work.
There's no credited colorist.
Yeah, see, so it might be him playing around with things.
Yeah.
Just like when Byrne overdid the Zipatone on Fantastic Four when the Thing came back from the Secret Wars. I think I'm not digging what Giri Huru's exploring with. This was the year that I finally came to terms with the X-Universe.
Uh-oh.
I stuck in there for the Bendis stuff. There were some good moments along the way, but I was not a fan of the bring the young X-Men back. But now, I think for the first time since I started reading comics again in the 90s, I think I'm going to finally come to terms with sort of dropping the X-Men books for a while. Yeah. I was never an Age of Apocalypse fan, and here we go again, you know. They even brought back my beloved Jean Grey, right? But she's become like a redundant character. There was Teen Jean, there's Hope, you know. The Scott and Jean dynamic completely missing with this resurrection. It seemed sorely absent. They finally corrected the Teen X-Men error, but I think it's kind of too late, you know? So many of these characters... I don't know. Some, as they're portrayed, they just make me yawn. I mean, the Beast, he's ruined. If I see him making another mistake in the lab that's going to cost all of mutant kind, I'm going to, you know, roll up my issue and put it in my back pocket. And Wolverine's return, it's like, you mean he was missing? I never really felt his absence, you know? Nightcrawler and Colossus with beards, they just seem like Slavic gypsies now. I don't know. They seem old and out of the way, you know? Old and in the way.
It's just weird. I keep on trying with the X-Men for, like, years, and they keep on misfiring. Like, there's so many other things that come back around, and I don't know how the X-Men can keep on misfiring over and over again. It's kind of incredible that where that franchise is.
They killed Cable, but no, they didn't. Again? He just turned him into a teenager. He's just the Cable we
X-Man?
Knew was gone. No, just another teenage version of... It's more like when Tony Stark was turned into a teenager from that old Avengers Crossing thing. And then they maybe smartly bottlenecked all of the tertiary titles into a new Uncanny X-Men book. But... honestly, guys, if you want to bore me, just keep telling stories with Bishop and have Legion make an appearance. And I go right to looking for another book.
Man, that first issue was, like, supersized, and it was just, the same thing repeated over and over and over again with the extra pages.
I really felt that... I know it's a weekly event, but you can do these a couple ways. And I think having the... no one knows what's going on, who the bad guy is, what's happening mode is very difficult. I think they would have been better. You know, you don't get till issue 3 or 4 till you have it established. And I think it would have been a better choice to sort of lay the stakes out at the beginning. Then you can have the hidden mysteries running along, like the Beast subplot line, where that's a mystery, you know, instead of having mystery upon mystery, which can make it tedious because then you're relying on the character moments for the most part. But when your book has 15 characters, literally, I think there's some crazy number.
It's more than
it
that.
Makes it hard to give those character moments that are going to drive the book. And the only thing going in their advantage is old Andy's so far behind. I didn't get to read issue one till I had like the first five or whatever.
So I read them all.
Well, the problem is I kept buying them because I hadn't gotten around to reading. You know, I hadn't gotten around to reading it. So I'm like, well, I better keep, you know, I want to keep on it. So then by the time I sat down and read all five, I was like, yeah, I think this is not going to be hard to get people as fired up. Whereas if they'd laid out, here are the stakes at the beginning, at least then there's less like Kevin was saying, where you're just like, yeah, blah, 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 blah.
Oh,
then you can sprinkle the mysteries in later.
I like
the first issue was such a mess. I mean, that coffee shop woman that said, this is the worst the world's ever been. And then she just goes on and on and on. And I'm just
But that matters.
I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, get out of my story.
That ends up being Legion in disguise. And that's why he does of the things he does afterwards. Because oh, man.
There's a way better moment for the in issue three. And I'm just like, I'm like, go away, get out of here. It almost reminds me of X-Men Red in some of the stuff in there.
I like the idea of there being a core X-Men title and have the other spin-off titles be just that. But the problem is they always try to break up the core team and put like one or two of them in each of those other titles, and it ends up watering down everything because those core characters don't have the relationships with those other tertiary characters as much to support that group dynamic. They should be like, I like the idea of Uncanny being the title again, but let's split off these other guys into their other little titles and then choose to see if they can stand on their own 2 feet. This is too big of a cast, resulting in too little characterization, and that whole Age of X-Men thing that's coming up, X-Man thing, it's just a hard pass for me. In six issues, has Psylocke, who's on the team, done anything but get yelled at by Archangel? You know? And Archangel! We finally got rid of, like, hippy-dippy Angel, hasn't known what he's doing and has seemed intoxicated for, like, the last 3 years of X-Men stories and has just been, like, a non-factor. And all of a sudden, he's Archangel again. How long did it take to get Archangel out of the Angel character, and then they didn't know what to do with him. And, all right, Archangel, pump him back in. It's just a big sigh.
At least they fought dinosaurs after the first issue, though.
Dinosaurs. If they're not in the Savage Land fighting dinosaurs, then I'm not interested.
Well, and I think Astra and Rosenberg are a great combination normally, but I wonder if they feel rushed or something. Because I feel like a lot of the color choices they do, especially in the beginning, where they'll have saturate like dark or red or blue over the whole page. And I feel like it's not doing it any favors. And I wonder if that's just a shortcut to get this book out, because it's a weekly book and there's a lot to be had for it. So I really felt that for having like an A-star team, this was not coming off, or maybe it's the paper. I don't know. I just felt it didn't come out, and I don't really like those. Let's just wash the whole scene in a color.
And I like Ed Brisson's characterization usually, but with this size cast, I don't know what he's contributing versus what Rosenberg's contributing writing wise. But I don't know.
I would. It's probably not an even split, but I came for like one third of the creative team, because I was like, don't usually read one of them. I'm like, other one, hit or miss, and then I'm like, I came for the other one. From the writer's side, like, the artist side is totally different, but I was just like, I don't know. I'm like, maybe all this will just smooth everyone out, and I'm like, I don't think that's what happened.
Well, I also feel the other trick might have been maybe they were trying to have all the artists kind of keep a similar style, and that might have cramped them all a little. You know what I mean? Because they're obviously with a weekly book not having the same team, and I wonder if they were all told to kind of try and keep it in the same family in a way, you know what I mean? And that's what's biting me on it a little bit, but I don't know. I don't know. What do you guys think of the art in these? Because I have the first five, and like I said, they move around the teams, and like I said, they keep it consistent, but it feels like it's not consistently the most awesome.
It's difficult to have well-paced sequential storytelling in this type of chaotic. I mean, everything just seems so crowded, and it's hard to follow a character's journey through any of the craziness because there's so many of them. Instead, you get all these big, giant group shots, and everyone's in a pose, you know?
Did you like the art better on that other Avengers, was it No Surrender weekly, than the X-Men so far, though?
Yes, I thought that was...
Ditto.
I thought that worked out better. I don't have those issues in front of me, so I can't go through. Like, I'm paging through these now. That's how I'm to remind myself of what. And it's not the storytelling work. Like, it's not like I don't know what characters what. They do a great job, especially as Steve says, with, you know, some of these panels have 8 to 10 characters on it. And so I know who they all are and everything, which is a masterful achievement. But I feel setting that stylistic tone that I've come to expect, especially when you're doing something like this, was kind of missing. And I wonder if this was more almost like an editorial driven book. And I've really enjoyed how Marvel oftentimes, like, say what you will about the Spider-Geddon thing, all those art teams really went crazy and did their own thing.
Yep.
And not, and I think that's a better way to go, but I understand, look, it's one title. We don't want to throw people by having, you know, someone does a giant, big furry blue beast, and the next one makes him more petite, and the next one makes him more cat-like or whatever.
It seems like an over-editorially choreographed book. I mean, so many creative people on it, so switching around and everything like that, and it's like, you know, it's not the vision of a writer and an artist working together, which I... let's say, thank goodness for the new Mr. and Mrs. X book that's written by Kelly Thompson with art by Oscar Basil Dua. It's got all the continuity and all the environments of the X universe that you love, but with a smaller cast. It's refreshing, to say the least. That I'm going to keep reading.
That's the book. Remember, Steve, when I said books you're probably not reading? But you are reading it.
And it's good.
I know, yeah. This is the... probably the only X book that I'm really enjoying.
Ditto.
But it, like, you look at the characters, and I'm like, I have some connection to these characters. You look at the creative team, and I'm like, everything seems good. And I'm like, it is good.
They reference the continuity, but they're not slaves to it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And there's some... I don't know how it'll be reflected in, like, other books, but it seems like there's some, like, current events or forward motion on some things you might have been wondering about in Marvel space, like how other things are going on.
Also, Steve, like you mentioned, with we didn't miss Wolverine and Cable didn't stay dead, I feel like with such a huge cast, they really could disappear some of these guys for 3 to 5 years and get more mileage maybe out of that experience of what's it like without them in the universe, as opposed to, you know, having them fill that void so quickly that you don't even know they're gone.
I don't know that I like that strategy to now we'll be able to tell good stories with them because we haven't for a while and you've forgotten about them. Just tell good stories with them and stop making so many derivative copycat versions of the character. I mean, the problem with Wolverine and not missing him was we had Old Man Logan, we got, you know, X-23 Wolverine. We've got plenty of Wolverine action to enjoy and, you know, they didn't take Old Man Logan out of the picture before Wolverine came back, so I don't know, he was never really gone, he just got older.
Because I did like that X-Men Exterminated, where it's Hope and Jean Grey kind of talking about Cable and
yeah,
sort of the Wake issue, but by not letting that breathe more, I feel like it just rushes in, especially with a lot of us reading stuff out of order and everything else.
Well, that's the whole thing with Hope.
It doesn't give it the breath.
Hope and Jean needed to have some kind of, like, what is Hope? We still don't know. Why did she look just like Jean? What's the whole deal with that? She was the Messiah child and all that stuff that Cable ran through time with as a baby and raised with Bishop chasing them, trying to kill them and everything. And it's just, what a hot mess.
Well, anyways, I like that one issue. But
yeah, it was cute. And the Deadpool thing with them where they get to one of the safe houses and Deadpool's there making himself a turkey sandwich or whatever and gets into the whole, hey, he was my friend too and we had a deal. You know, we worked together as a team and all that. That worked out okay. That had some – you know what? It was reduced to a story with three characters in it.
Yeah.
So
that's
there
where
you go.
That's – well, it helped, and I also did read the X-Men Holiday Special.
Wow. I give you a lot of credit, because that read to me so fractured, and it seemed like there needed to be one... It's like when you get a super band together of, like, all guys who are, like, well-established careers on their own, and everyone just hangs back. No one just jumps to the forefront and says, come on now, guys. No one wants to show the other guys. This had so many different creative teams and so many different little fractured stories that someone needed to stand up and say, let's connect them all with something clever, you know, or something. Good grief.
Well, I remember reading, I think it was an interview or maybe one of his books by Alan Moore, who talked about in his early career, what helped forge him the most was in England, there's a lot of anthology type books where you're writing very short stories, and how those are actually some of the most difficult. And this X-Men special is mostly one pagers. And so your options frequently are gag strip or a replying to sentimentality. Now they're smart and they got a few people like Soul and Brown who can do a gag strip. You know, so the gag ones I thought worked. The sentimentality ones I thought were very, very cloying for the most part and very like, oh my gosh, really?
I mean,
and I think that trying to write one-page stories is hard. Like I said, especially if you're going not gag, like how do you build in, you know, it's almost like doing like a comic strip guy. That would have been good if they'd gotten more of those. Because some of these are just groan-worthy. Like you said, also the lack of a through thread. But just grading them all on their own, you're just like, wow, this is terrible. This is legitimately a bad page.
They tried
comics.
To be clever and do it like a daily rip-off calendar, right? Where every day has its own page story. But what they should have done is revisited each one of those stories like each week. You know what I mean? So of the 4 or 5 weeks of December, on every Monday, you go back to the Jubilee story. On every Tuesday, you go back to the Deadpool. You know what I mean? Something along those lines so that they would have... Because it was a whole bunch of sound and fury that signified nothing.
I could have accepted as it were, but I think they should have done one more pass of submissions. And just really gotten rid of any of the weak ones and been like, we're only going to have the best. Because I like comic strips and I like gag books and, you know, I have Infinity Warps and all them other silly ones. But to put the kind of sentimental, like, X-Men are about the message of tolerance type of thing in a page is usually going to come off pretty hokey. Because you don't have the real estate to pay out kind of a meaningful exchange. So you're relying on a lot of shorthand. Also, by the time the one through line gets through in the end, it was so confusing in the beginning that you're like, oh, that's what put it together. But by then you've read, you know, 12 other of varying grade ones. But like I said, some of the gag strips I enjoyed. Like, I like a gag strip. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, but good Lord. The sentimental ones.
I like parts of the other holiday special a little better. There was a Deadpool Seasons Beatings one-shot written by Jason Latour that had a framing sequence that ended up tying into the last story, and then two other anthology stories. One of them was a Miles Morales and Peter Parker story that I thought fell a little flat, but the second one was a Squirrel Girl story where she goes to deliver a present to Dr. Doom, which is particularly funny because Squirrel Girl's first appearance was a Ditko-drawn tale where she got the best of Dr. Doom, which was really funny. And this has, like, some really good dialogue between a couple of the Doom bots. Like, Doom is shaking his fist at Latveria, saying, you know, how dare you patronize me with your obedience, you know, Latverians. And the two Doombots at the door are like, oh my gosh, if there's five thing that man hates, it's the Fantastic Four and the holidays. And they just keep going back and forth, and then Squirrel Girl makes her appearance, and Doom acts like he's not going to accept the present, but she leaves it and departs, and Doom can't help himself. He looks over his shoulder at the end, and he opens it up, and it's a Dr. Doom designed nutcracker with a little note that says, the next time you want to crack an enemy's skull, try cracking a nut first, which ties into the whole thing of she's Squirrel Girl and the Doom thing. And then the last thing is a fade out shot of just the castle, and you just hear the crack over the top of it, like, ooh, he already wants to crack an enemy's skull. I thought that was really well done. And then the last story is a Kate Bishop and Quentin Quire at the mall dealing with Deadpool and a mall Santa murder, and that has enough good Kate Bishop dialogue and moments that it kept me interested. Even though what was going on, the scenario wasn't that appealing, but her having to move through it was well done. So give that one a try. It's a little better.
Yeah, I haven't been to the that was the most recent release, and I have not been to the store for that. So I got to get, because that's, I need to pick up the Defenders number one, too. I mean, I got the one-shots, but I haven't picked up the first issue of the new Defender series because I haven't been to the store yet.
Is it, or is it just the fourth annual, like a Defenders annual that ends the story that they were telling in the Namor, Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange, Hulk annuals?
I thought, it's not the new series?
No, they're all one-shots, and then it all comes together in, like, the Defenders issue.
Oh. Well, I still need to get it, but I thought it was going to be the kickoff to a new Defenders series.
Well, there's an Invaders series coming up, so that's kind of tangentially related.
Wow, so they're going to reboot Invaders, but not Defenders. Boo! The classic Defenders lineup.
Well, maybe this is the test. This is the trial balloon.
Yeah, I imagine if this sold like gangbusters, they'll get someone to do something else.
Well, the problem is all the characters are in separate spots, so pulling them together
took some doing. Especially the status quo of certain characters.
I have caught up on the Avengers and Thor books written by Jason Aaron. Avengers, I think, has been pretty entertaining, but I think it'll be tested as the inevitable War of Realms starts when that spills over from Thor. We'll see how, since Aaron's writing both titles, I'm sure all this is going to matter. But
Avengers has only gotten better since the beginning. It almost feels like it's that uncanny X-Men situation where, like, is this going somewhere? Is he building to something? Like, I know, like, obviously, he's, like, a superstar and everything, and he has great books on, like, Avengers wasn't really there, but I kind of feel like it's getting there now.
But it's what I want out of an X-Men book, in that it's a smaller cast with room for more characterization. I mean, I like Captain America more in this book and in other books that he guest appears in, like Immortal Hulk, than I've been enjoying him in his own title.
And Ghost Rider is always entertaining.
Yeah, but I still don't really like this Ghost Rider versus the Ghost Rider that's the Spirit of Vengeance and everything. Like, this one isn't very well defined, and I guess maybe that's okay, but I don't know. I feel like he belongs over in Champions, where they've kind of put all the derivative and new teen characters all together.
Maybe, but I would just like to read a gag book where the car, like, you could just do like single issue stories, and the car just drives him around while he's sleeping to any random place, and then he wakes up and goes, "What's going on now? Where did the car leave me now? It was driving underwater." I laugh every time.
With the cliche of teens all doing joyrides in a car, I think that would fit right in with Champions, where they go on a joyride, and where do they end up now? I mean, the Champions just had a storyline where they were in Weird World.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's kind of cool. We got to see Crystar the Crystal Warrior and stuff. But I don't like that they've depowered Nova, the Sam, whatever his name is, Nova. But
I've never been a big... It's weird that I've probably read more Sam Nova than I have the new Ghost Rider. But I like the new Ghost Rider better than Sam. I don't know. Maybe it's the Richard Rider bias, right? I don't know.
But there's not enough Richard Rider, so there's, like, to take the Nova away from Sam and not be giving us more Rich Rider. I know he's going to appear in the Black Order limited series in a couple of months.
Really?
But still, we need a Nova out there, more well-established.
Maybe Guardians. We'll see.
Right, that's true. They're going to put all the cosmic they're doing what Andrew does in his own head. They're going to combine everything cosmic into one book and call it The Guardians.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, it keeps everything simple, Steve. I'm an old man. I can't pay attention.
And similarly to the Avengers book, where it's like, well, we'll see where it's going. I feel like the jury's still out on the new Thor title in some ways, too. It's still written by Aaron. But
did you read those two issues, Steve?
I'm all caught up. It's
okay.
Just...
Those two issues are as good as anything from any of the previous runs. I'm not saying those first five issues were bad. Like I enjoyed them. Yeah. They're good. But once you get to the worm and the future stuff and all that, insanity.
2 out of 8 is a 25% success rate, though. It's good, but it's just not as good as a book since the Jane Foster Thor book.
But I've always really liked the future stuff. But that I just want to read that future stuff just forever.
You like that the Doom, Sorcerer Supreme type Doom, having to fight him and everything?
And then it reminds me of the Hickman stuff too. And then you have all the characters, the monsters.
What I like better was
it's just so good, and the artwork. Out of this world.
I liked better the couple of issues just before that where they went to Hell and it was the return of Baldur the Brave and Hela. I like that stuff.
I wasn't as jazzed with that stuff. Like, it's good, but since we just ended the Jane Foster stuff, that was, I guess it was like an intermission, right? It's like the intermission's not as cool as the main act.
Yeah, I like a worthy Thor, though. This, like, many-hammered Thor, and then he crushes his hammers and has to go get another one. I don't know.
This isn't as good, but it's like still a legendary run, and still like I really enjoyed those issues. It's weird that I'm dividing up like the extreme high end of a scale, saying, well, this wasn't quite as good, but Thor being not quite as good is still better than most of the Marvel line.
True. It feels like it's the in-between, though, of the big story of Jane Foster Thor that ended and all of that, and then the building War of Realms that they've been talking about for years, and they're finally going to get to sometime soon.
Yeah, like, the war, like, that's going to be the pop-out, but since, like, we saw that book and when they've been talking about it for years, I'm like, I feel like that's legitimate. Like, if you go universe-wide crossover type of thing with the War of Realms, I'm like, that has been legitimately built up, and that is a big thing.
Too much self-pity in this thought. But
I mean, it's Aaron, right? Like,
it is Aaron.
Yeah, so he's rarely failed me.
How about the new Amazing Spider-Man title, the Spencer and Otley? It looks pretty in some ways, but it just hasn't gotten me that jazzed up. It feels still feels superficial. Like I want to see, like, that needs more subplots that are interesting to me, I think.
He has some long, long-running subplots, though. Like, he only touches on them, like, maybe every few issues. But it's funny that we didn't cover the end of Slott's run, and I don't know if we really ever will give it the coverage we gave to the other issues, but that's also because I was kind of tapping out a bit with the whole Osborn Carnage thing.
Yep.
Like, I didn't... That wasn't... I would never put that as, like, one of the best, like, arcs of Slott stuff. I would probably put that towards the bottom. So I've been enjoying the Spencer.
Well, Slott was on it. Slott was on it for a very long time, so...
I mean, I should say his last issue is really good. I enjoyed it. But, like, the arc before that, I was just like, I'm running out of steam.
And I liked that they kept it out of the Spider-Geddon.
Yes.
I thought was a good
well,
choice
they had
to
so
let.
So many now. Other series, like, they didn't really need it in there.
Well, I mean, none of that needs to be in there. Like, that's the point of these things. There's no need, but I did.
Well,
I also grabbed the new Miles Morales Spider-Man book. I don't know if you guys tried that one yet.
I haven't. I liked how the Spider-Geddon thing was more about Miles and Superior Spider-Man and kind of moving their stories along than Peter. That was kind of cool. And those are the two books that are coming out of Spider-Geddon, right? A new Miles Morales book and a new Doc Ock book.
And that PlayStation video game Spider-Man's getting a miniseries as well. And those are all the things that I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, I mean, while the only... You can probably just start the Miles Morales on issue 2. Because the first one, like, 3/4 of the issue is setting up the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we all know... Like, do they really think there's a bunch of 8-year-olds wandering into comic book stores? Like, who's Miles Morales? What? He's not Peter Parker? So, I, again, could have done without 10 pages of his backstory. I feel that could have been done in a page. Or, better yet, I would have preferred a writer who would have just weaved the status quo into the storyline. So, as a result, the actual what's going to be the story is maybe 5 pages. You know what I mean? That they seed within it, and the rest is all getting you up to speed. And I would have flipped that ratio and had... Okay. Here's the status quo melded well within the establishment of the story that's going to go move forward, you know, our little 5-issue arc.
I'm going to need to get up to speed.
But well,
yeah,
good.
The weaving in is usually what I enjoy more.
Well, you need to get caught up, Kevin, and it needs to be told in detail. I know you... You're not going to like it if they just did a quick summary that said where he was. You're going to want...
Not with the stopwatch running.
You're going to want the image of the spider biting him, him figuring out his powers. You're going to need that, Kevin.
Tick,
I know
tick,
you.
Tick, tick, well, tick, well, tick,
the problem was that they stopped those oversized hardcovers, so I never read any of the Miles stuff.
Well...
Womp.
I know. I was.
I feel bad. I did spoil it.
I got off the regular book, and then I was like, "Yeah, I'm only going to read these in oversized hardcovers." And then I think they did maybe 2 more after that, and that was the Peter Parker ones. And then they never did any more. So I was like, "Okay." And then I just waited and waited. I'm like, "There's no way they're not doing one." So you know, I guess I need to pick that up.
Well, I feel bad that I spoiled it, Kevin. He didn't get bit by a spider. That has nothing to do with it. It's a totally different thing.
Then how can you be Spider-Man if you didn't get bit by a crazy spider?
Did I cover that, Steve? Do you think he's faked out? Do you think he... But it looks like it's going to be fun. I just feel, you know, maybe issue two is the way to start that. And I think I need to give Miles in the 616 his own due and his own chance, and it's fun to have.
Oh, isn't it Prime?
No one calls it that anymore. I like how they're calling
half
it 616.
Half of the people call it, like, the Hickman thing, and half don't. It's really weird.
Read the last issue of Spider-Geddon, and they clearly are the Spider-Men of the 616.
I mean, I really enjoy that they dropped that silly point. Well, the other thing I think that's interesting to get sociological for a second is I find it nice that they're making a change to reflect some generational shifts. The original Spider-Man felt it was very important to keep his identity secret from his parental figures. And the new Spider-Man, of course, tells his parents. And I think it's interesting that it reflects, from my observation, how nowadays there does seem to be a closer integration of children with their parents.
I think in
where
media...
Where we were a generation, like those of us that are older, remember a time when it was really, you really kept separate. You did your own things. You were expected to go entertain yourself.
Kept your secrets.
So I just thought that was a neat, like, it's a shift in telling different stories, but it's also a shift in recognizing the changing demographics. And that's not everybody. You know, I know some people from my generation, they're best friends with their parents, and I'm sure there are some super independent kids now. But
I think it's a deliberate thing across media to, like, try not to give the impression that the adults aren't going to believe you if you tell them something. I mean, remember Snuffleupagus on Sesame Street? He was Big Bird's imaginary friend. No one could see him, and no one believed Big Bird that he existed because he would always be gone by the time they got there and all this sort of business. And they made a conscious editorial choice on Sesame Street to make everybody see Snuffleupagus because they were afraid if kids were telling their parents about the pastor or somebody reaching down their pants, that their parents were going to believe him and not believe anything they said. There was a shift to try to empower kids to be able to tell their parents stuff and not have it be misbelieved. So, you know, I think that societal shift that you're talking about is a real thing, and in some cases, it's deliberate.
Yeah, I just thought it was I was like, oh, that's kind of neat, because I live by a school, and I see, I think I've remarked upon, like, you never see kids walking to school by themselves anymore, and that was very common. In fact, a lot of times, kids didn't want to be seen with their, you know, your parent was
drop me off a block
cool
from
or
school.
Whatever. So I just find it's like a cool shift that, like, yeah, now it's a Spider-Man who, like, includes his parents. And he's an older guy. Like, he's, you know, in college or whatever. And it's just been an interesting shift.
At least he has his parents, Peter, with a lone tear down his eye.
That's like Peter every time he goes down the aisle and sees that Uncle Ben Rice.
Every time he tried to tell Aunt May she had a heart attack.
Hey, listen, Steve. Those wheat cakes weren't going to eat themselves.
That's true. You know what comic book I forgot to mention that I really liked? And I don't mean Black Panther, because I thought that was going Black Panther, I wasn't digging that much, and then they were going to reboot it with another title, and then with some, like, suggestion of some, like, cosmic Wakandan-type stuff, but I'm not really digging the new title of Black Panther either. But
Infinity Warps? I picked that one up, Steve.
No. What I am digging, though, and we forget about it because it's a different format than the regular floppies, even though it is new material, is the first two-thirds of Jim Starlin's Last Thanos trilogy for Marvel.
Oh, right.
With art by Alan Davis and Mark Farmer. The first one was Thanos Infinity Siblings, and the most recent one is Thanos Infinity Conflict. And these are the OGN oversized hardcovers that is new material. And there is a Thanos Infinity ending coming up in 2019. But, I mean, we're so fortunate to get another Thanos tale out of Starlin, especially since he hasn't had the best experience with the same editor over and over again, who is never going anywhere from Marvel. So Starlin is. And this is going to be the last thing he does for the House of Ideas, as far as we can tell. So,
as long as do you think they're going to?
Do you think they're going to put that in some kind of giant? Like how? I know you say it's hardcover oversized, but how thick are these? Like, are they going to do like a big omnibus type of thing? I wonder.
Maybe he did another trilogy of these a couple of years ago of these same in the same format. I don't know. They're nice, slim hardcovers. Why would you need to? You know, I don't know. It depends on their relationship.
Things
with
them, in every different format, Steve.
Sure.
Yeah, I like all the weird, various collected editions and everything. I have all kinds of different formats and everything. I just like when they sort of specialize and do really nice deluxe things.
Ooh, you know what else was really good, even though it wasn't on my radar? And it's something that we're going to have to look at more in detail together on a future episode, is Old Man Hawkeye. Written by Ethan Sachs, art by Marco Cicchetto. Totally not on my radar until I learned it was like the last Thunderbolt story. And
yeah, that kind of snuck up on us, because I was looking like another old man thing, and I'm
exactly.
Like, that I'm like, that's totally not my thing. And then as the series coming out, everyone's like, if you're a Thunderbolts reader, I'm like, really?
Yep. I same thing with me. Old man whatever does not interest me. Old man Star-Lord they're going to be doing next. It's like, what? But this was actually really well done. It's not blind Hawkeye. He doesn't get blind till the end, fortunately. So it's old man Hawkeye, but he's not blinded yet. And it goes through him kind of visiting with each of the Thunderbolts, and we kind of see how they all meet their end, or a version of them in the future. And that's the charm of the thing. And Kevin, Kate Bishop Hawkeye. Yeah.
Well, not to, speaking of snuck up on my radar, I think it was this year, but I really enjoyed X-Men Grand Design.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's big, still going.
Like a mad, crazy, one of those books that I'm like, I don't know how someone even does, like, where you... It seems like such an overwhelming project. I don't know how you would sit down and be like, you know what, I'm going to try and hammer this into one story.
I'm reading them in the treasury, the softcore treasury size. Oh, that's the way to do it, let me tell you.
Yeah, beautiful presentation. Like, it looks great. The oversized treasury, the paper, the art seems to match the paper great. I don't know. I was just very excited, blown away, impressed, whatever. All in all, I'm a big fan. Yeah, I hope they continue. You hear rumors about the other ones, and I'm like, I would in a heartbeat get any of these, because they're just such a impressed. Like I said, how do you? I can't figure out the X-Men current guy to do with
and he ties it together in a couple of ways that are clever too. You know, but. Come on, I mean, we're getting Old Man Star-Lord, and we've gotten Old Man Hawkeye, because Old Man Logan was successful a dozen years ago. You don't think they're going to go with other grand designs? You know, it might not be from Ed Piskor, but they're definitely going to go and try to do other ones of these.
You know, I would probably say any of the original titles, and then at some point I would say, like, I wouldn't feel bad if there was like 8 or 10 of these. Like, at some point, someone might say, okay, you're overdoing it, but I would feel like they're overreaching if you did any of the modern ones. But any Marvel title that has, like, 300, 400 issues, I'm like, that's totally fine.
Yeah, it has to be, as long as also they're well done. Like, that's the other thing.
Obviously, really, yeah.
But if they keep, and get, say they hire me to do the next one, it's going to look like garbage, Andrew? And be confusing,
Well, they could also do the Thunderbolts one.
Because, oh my God, they could have so much fun if they did like a Captain America and fold in some of the Golden Age.
Absolutely, yeah. Dude. Absolutely. And Namor. Namor's history, a guy who hasn't had his own title all the time. So you like even weave in his other appearances in other books and stuff. That'd be a lot of fun. Iron Fist, his history. I mean, a lot of the characters we've done histories of would be fun.
Yeah, but like I said, it has to be clearly not only a skilled person, but clearly he has a love for those characters. I'd have to think to put that much energy and effort into that book.
Is that bit going to make it into indie comic book noise, Andrew?
I don't know, but all I know is that's on my list of like things I've enjoyed. Part of it might have just been the surprise of it, because it sounded not that impressive. When I first heard about it, I was like, I don't know, and then, you know, just blew me out of the water.
A couple of titles I'm not really digging after trying them out, and I'm passing on them as ongoings, are the last Punisher title and Dan Slott's Iron Man.
Whoa, what?
It had a couple of good character things going in it, but I just haven't really dug like the threats involved, like his rogues gallery here so far.
I'm digging the Iron Man.
Good.
Except for, of course, my... I don't know as a younger reader why or how or... Like, Iron Man 2020. Like, I think I read maybe one story. But I guess he would show up in places, and then I'm like, yeah, like, he's one of the best characters. And it's like, whenever I see him in a modern story, I'm like, I fall asleep. But other than Iron Man 2020, and it makes sense because it's going to be 2020, right? But, like, all the other stuff in that Iron Man stuff, like, enjoying. And it's like, better than Fantastic Four, so I'm on board. But that one thread, I'm like, I'm sure it's going to become a big thread in that book. But, you know, we'll see how that goes.
I haven't read other than the first issue of Slott's FF. I'm going to read that, catch up on it, and
I've read
talk about it next episode.
The first four.
Yeah.
I think it turned around, Andrew.
I feel like they need to bring back Fantastic Foresight is what I feel like.
I know. I feel like we're doing it.
I feel like that would be fun to hear you boys with more of an attachment to the characters. But I do feel like it is coming together more.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Man, four issues is a long... I feel like now they're getting to it, and I'm going to get the next one, but if they don't continue to pick up, like if it stays at four, I think I'm probably... not going to be happy, but because it's been him, they're kind of getting things around and getting it together, I feel a little bit more safe with it, but I don't know.
That's Kevin, he was so excited about it, Slott, when I talked to him in Baltimore this past year, and he said he's really got all these stories in the can and all this, he's got it all long planned out and everything, and sometimes the problem with that is you spend a lot of time getting there because, you know, it's a safe route to the destination, you know?
It's weird, but like you could skip the first three issues and take issue four as your number one. Five seems like it's going to be character stuff, and then six, I guess we're going to get into Doctor Doom and other stuff, so I'm like, I see it improving, but let me ask you, Steve, does this sound familiar? The Fantastic Four has been away. A new unknown team comes in to replace them and is using the Baxter Building, and they're fighting the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
I mean...
is Matt Fraction back in the building?
No, but I'm like, wait, isn't this the device from Thunderbolts?
Yeah, right. And the F4 book and three other titles, I'm sure.
It's just so funny that it's not literally, but it's pretty close to the Thunderbolts plot. So I'm like, I enjoyed it on that other level too.
But I feel, I don't know, I'm also feeling that maybe the floppy is not the way to read this if he doesn't bring it around, because there's very little in the individual issues that make it, like it seems like it was more laid out to be read in That's kind of crazy.
That's what I loved about Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan's run on FF. Their mission was every issue to introduce another element and keep it. And every issue is like bing, bang, boom, 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 boom. What the heck's going on? But here comes Namor. Here comes this guy. Here comes that guy. That's a lot of fun.
I just finished listening to another podcast.
How dare you? How dare you listen to another podcast?
They finally finished the DeFalco Ryan run.
Yeah, it didn't end strong. But I still love
which,
that.
Which is funny because they enjoyed the end of the run more than the rest of the run.
Well, towards the end of the run has that one where Black Bolt's got the little forky thing on his forehead like is bent, and because of it he's like going crazy. That's funny as heck.
And they didn't really enjoy the Pacheco coming on at the end for two issues.
Right. But then Pacheco's run himself, where he was writing the book, that has some charm to it. That's one of those ones that we meant to get to while we were doing Foresights and never did.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I was reading and I enjoyed the runs during that book, so, and I know you didn't, Steve, but I enjoyed the other runs too.
The Deadpool book written by Scotty Young also really hasn't been entertaining to me. I guess I'm more of a Daniel Way or Jerry Dugan Deadpool fan. It just seemed to be like what I used to kind of think about Deadpool before I got into the characterization of him that I enjoyed.
See, I was a Joe Kelly Deadpool guy.
I know.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know about Scotty Young. Like, I picked up his new indie book, Middle West, the first one, and he's just writing it. And I don't know. It doesn't. It didn't. There was nothing to it, really. I felt like nothing I hadn't seen a lot of other places. And I wonder if maybe he made the jump to writer too soon.
My last stop on my round table, at least going around my carousel around the Marvel superhero universe, is Daredevil.
Whoa.
From this last year.
Page by page?
Amazingly, I think it was 612 was the last issue. In the editorial at the end, writer Charles Soule just wrapped up a 5-year, over 40 issue run.
He says he was on a long extended run, and I'm like, no way he wasn't. It wasn't many issues, and then I'm thinking, but did it double ship?
Five years, 40 issues? Shouldn't it be 60 issues? 5 years?
And then I was like, maybe it didn't double ship off. And I'm like, maybe it was just a monthly. But I'm like, for Marvel now?
It seems like barely.
I can't think so.
I mean, that's not even 10 books a year. 5 year, 40 issues. It must have been some fill-in stuff. I don't. But I can't believe it's been that long since Wade revamped the character, you know? After his last death. Now he's dead again.
This run has been such a run of like peaks and valleys.
Agreed. I thought it started off strong. I like the Ron Garney stuff. I like the addition of Blind Spot.
Yeah,
I think Daredevil works good with a sidekick partner type character, whether it be the Black Widow or Elektra or this Blind Spot guy, even.
And the book gets weird after 600 when Garney's not there.
Very. And I also liked the whole mystery and the deadly threat of the urban artist Muse. I thought he was pretty cool. And then the Kingpin tried to hire him, and it, you know, like Muse doesn't work for nobody kind of thing. He's definitely the urban rebel type, almost like a supervillain graffiti artist, if you will.
Yeah, I kind of came around on Muse by the time he started having other stories and stuff like that. Like, because I guess it affects, like, maybe if I read those stories, it would affect my enjoyment, and I would enjoy them more. Like, if a character's not a one-off, like, you never know.
Also,
like, certain characters during his run that show up, and you're like, well, that's just some character, or oh, they're bringing like the that guy that was working for the Inhumans.
Yeah, that's where it went off the rails.
And then, like, these characters keep on coming back again.
I liked the idea of Daredevil's alter ego, Matt Murdock, the lawyer, working in Mayor Kingpin's office. I thought that had its charm to it, right? Because he could be hearing what's going on, and then at night doing something about it as Daredevil.
That's the best stuff. And then you get, like, 600... I'm like, it's kind of funny. Like, I think of 300 was the fall of the Kingpin, and 600 is Mayor Fisk. I'm like, it seems appropriate, but like 600's another one of those, like, we have a lot of extra pages, but we don't do a whole lot.
Yep. 600 to 602 brings all of these intriguing elements that Kevin and I are mentioning here to a close. And then the final 9 issues that tear this whole status quo apart.
It's weird.
Like, so unsatisfying, so anticlimactic.
Like, I was thinking, I'm like, am I bored? I'm like, I'm not bored. And then I'm like, is this really good? I'm like, no, it's not really good. So even, like, even when it seems average, like, there's always one idea in there that seems crazy where you're just like, I can't believe, like, that happened. So... it's a weird place to be.
They did the
but
Dallas.
I like that they started using that idea that I heard about, like, decades ago, where it's like Daredevil becoming the mayor. I'm like, that's cool. I want to explore this. And then it doesn't, like, you don't, it doesn't outlive itself.
But Mike Murdock comes back, and it's all because of the thing, like you said, the elements of the Inhumans brought into it. It's the elements of the Inhumans that stunk about those Inhumans books that Soule also wrote. And then he brings him in to ruin Daredevil by bringing in Mike Murdock again, but he's his own guy. And no, I want to be a real boy. I want, you know, it was like Pinocchio. And then to find out it's all a fever dream. They pulled the Dallas TV show bit. And Daredevil's really dead, and this is all, like, the whole big final battle with the Hand and bringing down the Kingpin and fighting the Beast of the Hand and all that stuff is all just, like, his last thoughts before he dies on an operating table? Yeah, spoilers. But he's died before, you know? He dies, he just, didn't he just die and have to go on a walkabout and come back? I don't know.
I think that was 8 years ago. Dude. I don't, it's, that was a super summary, Steve.
All I gotta say, wow, was it that long ago?
All the legal battles on the previous Daredevil segment, where I went to it in excruciating detail.
All I gotta say is this storyline elevates Shadowland, and that's saying something.
Wow. Because they could have popped this out to be a Dark Reign or a Shadowland or something. And I'm like, it's great that it was its own thing in its own book. Because there are some, like, important things. And I'm like, is Ghost Rider going to show up? Like, he's the only character that doesn't show up.
Nope, it's only in Matt's mind.
But there's, when the death... yeah, spoilers. When the death of Daredevil starts and... it starts with him in the operating room. I'm like, oh no, don't tell me we're going to get 4 issues of him, like, fighting his demons in some dream realm for 4 issues. And that's not what happens, but that's kind of what happens.
Yeah, the demons aren't symbolic. The demons are all of the actual characters and the status quo that we were just treated to as reality in all of the previous issues. But now... the end of all of that reality is all a dream.
It's funny.
Oh, gosh.
You don't know. Like, characters are, like, miswritten or, like, out of character. I'm like, is he just, like doing this title badly? Is, like, Elektra just appearing out of nowhere? And I'm like,
right.
Well, he did have her in the other issues, but I'm like, he didn't set anything up. All of a sudden, she's there. Doing all this stuff, and I'm like, this seems out of character, and you're like, oh, that's why it's out of character. Like, anything that seems weird, it's like, oh, that's why that was weird in that story. But yeah. We still spend 4 issues on it. Like, I know people usually do this, like, 1 issue, oh. Like, Bendis, wasn't his last issue, like, some weird fever dream
I don't craziness. Remember. There's so many. But because he's getting so many sentenced. Last issues of Daredevil now.
He's getting sentenced in during the Bendis run, and then you see him escape, and all these characters come after him, and you're like, "What is going on?" And then later on, you find out, like, "Oh no, it was just Matt imagining himself not going to jail." And I'm like, I can't believe we're sort of doing something like that again. Like, there's people that were speculating on the first appearance of a new character in here, but that character never really exists.
Yeah, but if it's a popular character, they will find soon. A way to. Yep.
Well, make that's it what I mean. It's going to be a whole Zorn situation, but it's going to have to be like a whole new character. And it's almost like that time Iron Man revealed his secret identity to save a dog from getting run over. I'm like, I can't believe all these things are coming together. It is weird.
Remember when Iron Man had a secret identity and everyone thought he was his Stark's bodyguard?
That's a decent riff.
That was fun.
And then Rhodey actually was the other Iron Man and was his bodyguard. And then he became War Machine.
And apparently, Hammerhead, you might not want to go to his Instagram page.
And the last title that I haven't caught up on and I'm going to for the next episode because it's on deck to read is Mark Waid's Doctor Strange. I haven't read any of this title yet. I think it's like 10 issues in the can already. I'm looking forward to digging into it. Have you guys read any of it?
You know, it's funny, Steve. Neither have I. And I'm like, yeah, I should get caught up on this. And I'm like, what if it's not good? I'm just like, because I'm thinking of like, hey, we could do a thing together. And then I'm like, what if we read 10 issues in a row and then we're like, you know, we don't have the energy.
Well, that's never going to happen. You guys, you're always positive. I'm the negative guy.
I feel like this was a cathartic Marvel Noise discussion as we were like getting all of the bad juju out of our system before the new year here.
Well, did you tell them why? Because next episode, it's all going to be about all the good books. Not that we didn't have, like, we had some good books here, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, we talked some positive stuff.
Like, I'm going to have all my stuff read, and it's going to be, like, all the best books that I read during the year. So I'm getting out all the other stuff this episode, too.
So, Kevin, are you still in the, I know we talked about Unstoppable Wasp, but are you also still reading Moon Girl and some of them other, Squirrel Girl, some of them other titles? From that corner?
Maybe. Like, this is... Yeah, I feel like we don't give those books enough credit. Because those books last longer than long-standing characters. Like, those books are some of the books of, like, this generation that makes old fans uncomfortable.
Yeah, but isn't Squirrel Girl hitting, like...
found an audience.
Isn't Squirrel Girl hitting, like, her 60th issue or some crazy thing like that coming up?
It's pretty nuts.
But, pun intended.
Wow.
Well, I mean, just for a book today to make it past 10 issues is some sort of small miracle.
I did start buying, like on a monthly basis, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur when they started doing the Princess Fisk thing, because I'm like, that sounds interesting. But I have not read those issues yet.
Okay. But you're still on the... On the hook for it, so to speak. Yeah, I mean, Steve did a big coverage, so I wanted to make sure we hit the other. Also, didn't know, Captain Marvel's obviously had a big year, but I guess she's part of the Avengers corner.
She really
I don't
has,
know how what family she, we're.
She really I think didn't her big have year big is coming year. Up.
Exactly. She was kind of part of Outer Space Alpha Flight, and then they did that Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck, Captain Marvel. miniseries that kind of stopped her regular series, and now it kind of seems like things are in a holding pattern until, you know, the movie and the new title. So she's on deck to have her big year, I think.
Yeah, and I fully expect her to have a big year.
Sorry, it looks like Squirrel Girl's hitting maybe issue 40, not 60, but still 40 issues in Marvel Land is not in today's, and Moon Girl is like right behind her.
Yeah.
An issue or two. I guess the only other one is the Spider-Man Deadpool is the only one that's still...
Or Ms. Marvel.
You know, up in high numbers.
the thing about Squirrel Girl too is I believe she's had an OGN or maybe more. She's had some other stuff too. Yeah, oh, and there's a whole Marvel Rising thing too.
Yeah, just a big. Oh yeah, that's right. That happened this year, didn't it? I read a lot of that. Remember reading that all out of order and being all excited, and then realizing that I just skipped the first issue because I'm like, "This is great! They really throw you in." And
oh no, and they Ms. don't. Miss Marvel is
out of book for
5 years.
All right, let's ding the bell and retire to our corners and get a cut man to work on our scrapes, and we'll let the solstice do its thing and have a New Year event, and then let's gather again on the other side and pick apart Kevin's top 10 list.
All right, I'm ready for this year. I'm ready for you guys to tell me how wrong I am. Should be exciting. I'll retire, get refreshed, get to my corner, and then we'll go a few rounds, see if someone gets a knockout punch.
Thanks to all our listeners and downloaders and commenters and all that good stuff for participating in what we do here and enjoying the show. And thank you, of course, Kevin and Andrew, for always getting together to do this thing with me. It's funny, as we said when we had our anniversary show, it's funny how the show has become us doing our thing.
Yeah, I know. I used to always think I was sneaking in. I'm like, did they notice? All right, I got on another episode.
We're going to try to make a push to make episodes a little shorter with not as many topics each episode, and we'll see if we can succeed in that realm and possibly get our podcasts out more frequently. But hey, you got an iPod, you can, or an iPhone, you're allowed to pause and listen to the second hour next week if you want. But have a great holiday and a great new year, and we'll see you on the other side. Until then, make mine Marvel.
Until Fing Fang Foom becomes the Sorcerer Supreme. Oh, wait, no, that would be cool.
That would be cool. Any Foom is cool.
A cooking Foom. If Marvel... You know, since they do some different books from time to time and catch different audiences, can you imagine a Foom as a cook ongoing series?
What's funny, too, is like Foom has become such a beloved character or an endearing character in the Marvel history. When you go back and you look, it's funny how little Foom was actually used until like the 90s and beyond. That even when Marvel had the Foom magazine, you know, the fandom magazine in the 70s, Friends of Old Marvel, they didn't, like, why wasn't Fin Fang Foom, like, the mascot? You know what I mean? Like, how did they miss that? Too funny.
Like, he could be the next Howard the Duck or something, and then we do get a cooking series. Stokoe doing a... Oh, wait, no, he's already done a cooking series. That would be weird.
Foom in the Noodle Factory.
Boy, you that was incredible. Ooh. Steve, that was incredible. Your run breakneck pace through Daredevil, I'm like, wow, this is legendary.
Well, we had been talking for an hour and a half already, so my kids are going to get off the bus in about 15 minutes.
Don't need an in-depth,
You know, it was cool that all the heroes were there, but they weren't there, just in his brain.
They were there for most of that.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't even look back to try to figure out what was real and what was dream. Just like,
I have a bunch of those random issues, but I didn't get the full run, so it'll be interesting reading. Just
I believe this is the other thing. I didn't mention it because we were just running, but it seemed like there wasn't going to be enough build up to him taking down Fisk as mayor, and then they're just going to be like, there's going to be some MacGuffin in the last issue, and then Fisk is going to be done. But as far as I'm aware, Fisk is still the mayor.
Exactly. And the whole thing of Blind Spot selling his soul to the hand to beat Muse and kill Muse, And then the whole big thing of the hand coming and the beast coming at the end being retribution for that because they're coming for Blindspot. That didn't happen. He made the deal. He made the deal, but the hand didn't come back, right?
I think some of that happened. Yeah, I think some of that... It's weird. It gets a little weird.
It sure does.
Because even the beast, I'm like, it more. He looks more like Slug. Like I guess I always picture the beast as the Elektra Assassin beast.
Right. This is like Mojo out of his cybernetics.
So it's like really easy to, once that beast is on the loose, it's like, it's really easy to get this beast.
Oh, and Mojo is trapped on our world, right? So maybe it was Mojo.
Or the Slug.
But I'm like, read the Mojo one-shot that came out. I know they had a Mojo one-shot. Oh,
yeah, they did. The X-Men Black.
You'd be all excited that Sugar Man was in the Uncanny X-Men.
The thing I was most excited by, and I'm sure this is Brisson and those dudes just growing up on 90s comics, like Cullen Bunn bringing back the Dark Riders or anything, they included all these like obscure X-Men villains. I'm like, I like these dudes. Like we haven't seen these dudes usually, even though they keep on popping up with more frequency now that we're way out of the 90s. But it's like, yeah, Sugar Man and all this, and then it's like, oh, let's just say maybe he died. And I'm like, oh, this guy, oh. And everyone's just going, I don't know what's happening. That guy's coming after me. And I'm just over and over again. But it was cool to see him.